Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, April 16th, 2017. This is episode 1381. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/techguy. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about chocolate bunny rabbits. No, Peeps. Peeps used to be a big thing on the internet. This is the tech show. We talk about the tech stuff. So if it's on the internet, we talk about it, which means everything. Computers, home theater, digital photography. Big fan of that. Love to talk about that. Video games, video game consoles, virtual reality, smartphones. Lots of smartphone talk. Smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to call and make a comment or make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could just use Skype to reach us or some other voice over the internet. But you have to have a Skype out, ability to call a phone number in the U.S. And because it's a toll-free number, it shouldn't cost you anything. You can also, watch us live. We have a live stream going at all times. Listen to podcasts. The website has everything you need to know, even the stations we're on at techguylabs.com. Answers to questions, so you don't have to write them down and all of that. But the main thing, if you do me a favor, is, you know, call me. Don't feel shy. Just call 888-827-5536. Apple, I love this figure. I remember in the early days, I read a biography of Bill Gates, the early days of Microsoft, when I probably was round about when they did DOS for the first IBM PC, and they did such a smart deal. Bill Gates, I don't know if he just out-negotiated IBM or IBM didn't think this thing would take off or whatever, but they came to him and said, we need an operating system for our PC. We're going to have a new PC. This is back in 1981, and Bill managed to negotiate a very good deal where they would license the operating system to IBM, but they'd keep the rights to it. They didn't give it to them. They didn't sell it to them. They got a buck a copy or whatever. Right about then, I think the dough kind of started to roll in for Microsoft. And it rolled in unexpectedly. And I don't think they had an infrastructure to deal with riches. So they just would put it in the bank and buy certificates of deposit, CDs. And then, and they'd get enough money in a bank that was up to the insurance limit. They'd go to another bank and another bank, and they just ended up with thousands of certificates of deposit of money invested. It just starts to pile up, and it's a remarkable thing. Software, almost all the cost is up front. Designing it, hiring the teams of programmers and spending the energy to design it. That may be years. And then there's really no production cost. Making CDs in those days are floppy disks, or boxing it and putting on shelves and selling it. I guess you'd give up a cut. But nowadays, there's no, software is, like pure profit once you get it out the door. And the bucks just kind of roll in faster than, in an industrial era, you'd use that money. Some of that would have to go to buying new materials for new stuff. I guess you'd pay for new programmers. Apple's kind of the king of this these days. They have a lot of money. $246 billion in the bank. Much of that's overseas for tax reasons. They don't want it in the U.S. So they, like many other companies, do a little dodge. They call the Irish, I think it's called the Irish sandwich. it's legal. It's a little manipulative, but it's legal. It's not illegal. And I guess, you know, if you're a publicly held company or just a company in general, your responsibility is to, you know, pay as little tax as you're legally required to. So what they did is they created, Apple created a branch in Ireland and then transferred the rights to much of their intellectual property to the branch in Ireland. You could, I mean, on one hand, if Apple sold a lot of stuff, as they do overseas, well, that's legitimately overseas income. And, you know, it's stored in overseas. But this also meant that money that they made in the U.S. would flow to this Irish subsidiary as well, because they paid license fees to the Irish subsidiary to make their phones and so forth. And it's all the same company, but it's a way of taking the money out of the U.S., not taxing it at U.S. corporate tax rates, which are among the highest in the world, and taxing it at a much more favorable rate. Ireland wanted the business. So I think something like $200 billion of this massive war chest, quarter of a trillion dollar war chest, is overseas, is in Ireland. And actually from Ireland, I think they sent it somewhere else. The Canary Islands, I think. It's complicated. It's the kind of thing you can only do if you're a big, wealthy corporation, obviously. I would love to do this. I'm going to start a tech guy subsidiary in Cork, Ireland, and give them the license fees to my name. See, you couldn't. It really wouldn't work. Quarter of a trillion dollars. That number, not the company. The company's much more valuable than that even. But that the money they've got in cash, they could write a check on. Can't write it in the U.S., though. They'd have to pay taxes on it. So they could write a check in Ireland on. is larger than Sri Lanka's gross domestic product. A little smaller than Denmark's, though. Right in between Denmark and Sri Lanka. If just the cash pile alone, not the rest of Apple, but just the cash in the bank, were a company, it would be the 13th largest company in the world. It's that much money. And, of course, on Tuesday, Apple announced its quarterly results, and it sold more iPhones than Wall Street thought it would do, which meant its stock price jumped 3%. And when your stock price is as high as Apple's, that's a significant amount of money. What Apple would like to do is get its money back out of Ireland. But the problem now is it's been taxed in Ireland, admittedly at a lower rate, in some cases at a no taxes. They don't want to pay another tax, a 35% corporate tax, when they repatriate. And so they're trying to talk the president into a new tax law that would, and he said he'll do this, that will let them repatriate at a mere 10%. Apple get all that quarter of a trillion dollars back. Of course, what are they going to do with that money? You know, it would be nice if they'd build factories and hire people. That's not what they're no, don't dream on. First thing they're going to do is pay off loans. They're borrowing against that money, because they don't have access to it. They can't spend it in the U.S. They borrow in the U.S., so they have money in the U.S. So they're borrowing at a fairly low interest rate, because after all, it's backed up by a quarter of a trillion dollars in Ireland. So they borrow against it. That's the first thing they do, is pay off those loans. And then the second thing they do is buy back stock. That's what they've been doing. So it would be a windfall for owners of Apple stock. And Apple itself, I don't think it would create an economic stimulus particularly. $246 billion. That's up $8.5 billion from last quarter. That's how profitable it is making iPhones. And don't kid yourself. It's all iPhone money. It's all iPhone money. It's an amazing thing. Actually, that was in January. That was end of January. That was a month and a half ago. It's probably more than that now, right? I apologize. Yeah, this article's from the end of January. So those stock results were from the end of January. Good, but, you know, nevertheless, Apple stock still doing well. Doing fine. It's a tax day Tuesday. Speaking of taxes, you and I will be writing a nice big check, right? if you haven't already. Do beware, though, and this is an annual warning. The IRS will not call you at your home. They will not. They do not. And they will not email you. Scammers, though, happy to do it. And so beware if you get a call or an email from the IRS that really isn't from the IRS. And it is a scam. Even if you can't figure out what the scam is, it is a scam. Also, pay close attention to your return and your refund. And make sure you get your refund, because another scam is to file fake returns and claim people's refunds. It's that time of year again, sad to say, for several reasons. 8888-ASK-LEO. Kim Schaffer's here. She's answering the phones. Let's get some calls on right after this. Yeah, I apologize. Thank you for the tip. The chat room said, well, Leo, that was the end of January. Oh, you're right. I don't know why I noted that then to yesterday. That's weird. It must have showed up in my feeds somewhere. Gotta look at those datelines. Gots to look at those datelines. I'm going to delete that one from my list. If you get a letter from the IRS, you should. If you get an email from the IRS, you should not. The IRS uses, who'd have thunk it, the Postal Service. They kind of prefer it. Yeah, that was the picture. I think you're talking about the picture that Bill Wadman took yesterday of me under my desk. Yeah. Isn't that awesome? That was yesterday. Some of you might have seen us shooting that. He came in here shooting. He's doing a project, 365 portraits a year. It's a portrait a day for a year on his Instagram feed. It came out pretty good, huh? You like it? You're in it. John's in it.
He took like 100 pictures, and I'm in like one frame.
I think he liked the one because I'm hiding from you.
Exactly.
It's pretty funny. Now people can see how ratty my desk is, how worn. I didn't even know it was that worn there on the right. It's probably from this drawer hitting it. And those are all the wires I'm not supposed to go under the desk and hit.
You're sitting on the wires.
It's worse than it looks. Is that what you're saying, John? I'm hiding the wires. It's worse than it looks. Yeah, he did a nice job. That is a medium format picture. I'd love to see the original, man. Every pixel is available.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
On the left, there's the ISDN, dual ISDN boxes we use. That's what we use to connect to the radio station. On the right, the roll of paper towels. For emergency use when I spill my coffee, which I will do every once in a while. There's the speaker under there is my speaker. That's what I hear when I turn up the sound in my office. You don't ever hear it because it's muted when the mic comes on. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. There's no gum under the desk, I'm happy to say. Pretty cool. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Kim Schaffer, she's manning the phones. She's ready to answer your calls. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
You ready?
I am ready.
Happy Easter. I see you're wearing Easter Bunny.
Easter pink.
Pink. It's cute.
I don't have Heather's ears, but.
It's cute. No, you don't need ears. You don't need ears. Who should I see many, many calls, which is surprising.
Calls.
Usually on a holiday, it's quiet in here.
Well, they need help.
Computers never.
And we're going to ease you into this Easter Sunday with an easy one.
I like it.
Christian in Nashville has a question, the difference between routers and modems.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim.
I think you could answer that one pretty easily.
I hope I can. Hi. Hello, Chris. Welcome. Our Christian, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, Leo.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey.
So, let's talk, you and I.
All right. So, I have always wondered what the difference is between a router and a modem.
It's a good question because a lot of people get one device from their internet service provider that does both. And in fact, that's maybe not the best way to do it. So, it's a really good question. So, for many people, maybe you, your router is your modem and your modem is your router. It's one device. but they do different things. The modem, which goes back to the good old days of dial-up internet. Remember, do you are you old enough to remember calling a phone? You don't remember that? Wow. It stands for modulate demodulate, modem. And what a modem in the early days did is it took the data out of your computer, which is ones and zeros, right? It's bits, and turned it into sound, because phone lines only handled sound. So it would modulate the bits into. That's why you'd hear, if you could listen to your modem when it was working, it would usually turn its speaker off because you didn't want to hear. But that's what you hear. The is bits flying and as sound. So when we got to the point of ISDN, which was a digital line, we didn't need to do audio anymore, and then followed DSL, and then followed cable modems. All of those cables, cable internet, all of that kind of internet isn't sending audio anymore. It's sending data, but it's sending it in a form that isn't the same as Ethernet, which is how your computer needs to connect to it. The physical cable is an Ethernet cable. So, you know, they probably should have renamed it, but they still call them modems. They're not really turning data into sound anymore. They're turning radio frequency signals, in the case of a cable modem, into bits. They're converting it to Ethernet. And so your cable modem, if we're just a cable modem, would have two connections on it, one on the back for the cable coax, if it's from a DSL company, be a phone line going in, and then an Ethernet jack going out. And if you only had one computer, you'd plug, and in the early days, that's probably all anybody had on the internet, we'd plug the computer into that Ethernet jack, and you'd be online. But it wasn't too long before people got more than one computer. Now you got a problem. There's only one Ethernet jack on the back. And so you need, and by the way, you have only one internet address from your internet service provider, so you need a way to put multiple devices on a single internet connection. And that's what a router does, and its name betrays its function. It is routing traffic that's coming in from the internet to the individual computers and vice versa. So if you have a couple of laptops, a desktop, a phone, and so forth, and they're all connected to the router, when you open up a web page on your laptop, the router goes, okay, that laptop requested a data packet from this website. It's now going to route, when the data packet comes back, it's going to route it over to your laptop. So that's what a router does. Now, it does a lot more than that, but that's the base function of it. Sometimes your cable modem or your DSL modem will have multiple Ethernet ports. That means it's got a router built into it. Sometimes it'll even have antennas. It means not only does it have a modem and a router, it has a Wi-Fi access point. All three of those are different functions. The Wi-Fi access point now turns into a radio, so you don't have to be physically connected via Ethernet. Many times, all three functions are bundled into one box. My suggestion, though, in general, is to get a separate cable modem or DSL modem. In fact, if your company will let you buy one, get a good one, a modern one, instead of one they're renting to you for $10 a month and it's old and used and who wants it. And then get your own router. And by getting your own router, you have much more control over quality and how your router works and all of that stuff. So it's nice to separate those out. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I have one more quick continuation on that if there's time.
Sure.
So, like you were saying, and many people say that, you know, you should buy a nice router. Even like Google Wi-Fi looks pretty cool. So we have Comcast, and basically they told us when we got it, well, since you have home phone service, which is voice over IP, you have to rent our stock router.
Isn't
otherwise,
nice?
Any router you buy isn't going to work.
Isn't that sweet of them? They have an ulterior motive for that. Is it Wi-Fi also?
It's, well, what do you mean, the router? Or?
Yeah, it's a box that you get from Comcast. Is it also wireless internet?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So it's all three. It's a modem demodulating the cable signal. It's a router spreading that one internet address to many computers. And it's a Wi-Fi access point. And the ulterior motive, the reason Comcast wants you to do that is because when you use their Wi-Fi access point, unless you explicitly tell them not to, they create an Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspot. Have you seen those around?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So now they see that as a service to their customers. As you wander around town, you're on Wi-Fi, if you're an Xfinity customer, for free all over town. Then the other shoe dropped. They announced this week that they're also going to do phone service, much of which will be based on Xfinity Wi-Fi. When they can't get Wi-Fi, they'll use Verizon's connectivity. But most of the time, they'll use their connectivity when they can. So they've been building a business on your back. They claim it's not insecure, that it's isolated. The Xfinity Wi-Fi hotspot is isolated. They also claim it doesn't count against your bandwidth, doesn't use up your bandwidth. And I think all that's probably true. But if I had it, I would turn it off. And here's the answer to your question. Yeah, you do have to use, you know, their router for their phone service, but you don't have to use it for your Wi-Fi. So what I would do is go into the router, disable the, if you can, and I think you can, disable the Wi-Fi. Then you can get the Google Home or the Eero or the Plume or the Orbi or all sorts of really nice Wi-Fi access points and use that instead. You'll have to put it in bridge mode, which means don't do any routing. The cable modem wants to do all the routing. And you are stuck with that on the triple play, I guess. You know, that's the price you pay for phone service because they're trying to control it. But truthfully, they don't have to do it. The reason they do it is because they want to set up an Xfinity hotspot, I believe. It's a profit.
Okay, so you would go out of the router as an Ethernet connection, the Xfinity router, and then with the Ethernet connection into
a Google Home or one of the whatever Wi-Fi mesh you want. Yep.
All right, cool.
In order to do that, though, you're going to have to tell the mesh router not to be a router, just be a Wi-Fi access point. It's all Wi-Fi routers are dual function. They have routing capability, but you don't want two routers on a network. So, and since you can't tell Comcast not to route, let it do the routing. Sometimes DHCP or NAT, it's called, same thing, and put your Wi-Fi access point in bridge mode. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, I know they're not the same thing. However, the switch you want to switch off sometimes is labeled DHCP, sometimes it's labeled NAT, sometimes it's bridge mode. It's labeled differently in every system, unfortunately. Well, and I don't, you know, the Google Wi-Fi router, as you know, I'm not crazy about it anyway. I've been very happy with Plume in our house, but I think every situation, these mesh routers all work better than nothing, and they work better. Some work better in some situations than others. My experience with the Google was not very good. I love the Eero's, I love the Plume, I love the Orbi. I like the part of the problem in my particular neck of the woods. Is for some reason, even though we live in the country and the nearest neighbor is hundreds of feet away, I see so many Wi-Fi access points. I see their printer, but they're all on 2.4 gigahertz. See, 5 gigahertz won't travel over all that distance. So I like using the Plumes because they create 5 gigahertz little pools in each room, and they seem to work very well. The Orbi worked very well for speed. Orbi has incredible distance, but I didn't want to impinge on them. The Eero was great, but it was expensive. I needed more Eeros than I so the Plumes were $49. The Eeros were what is it? I can't remember, $100+ each. So I ended up just buying the Plumes for half that cost. And as part of my testing, I tried every one of them. I had the Amplify and the from Ubiquiti. I tried every mesh router I get my hands on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 asked Leo. Great little song. That's about the three little pigs, right? One had a house of straw, one had a house of sticks, and then one had a brick house. And the wolf could not. He huffed and he puffed and could not blow it down. Love that story. Million in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Million.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Good. I can't believe I reached you this time. I tried calling multiple times, man.
It's a life miracle. It's a miracle. Oh, yeah. I'm glad you got in. I know it's hard. Yeah. You know, we have six lines, and that's because we wouldn't want to keep you on hold too long, and Lee only gets about five or six calls in an hour at most. So, you know, an hour hold is a long time. So we only have six lines, and there's lots of people listening. So, yeah, it's hard to get in. True. I'm glad you got in, though.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been a long listener, but this is the first time to talk to you, so I can't believe it. So my question to you is, I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
One is my phone is Samsung S5 Mini, and the radio signal is not working. I tried to test the software. I don't think it's software issue.
Are you getting no bars at all?
It's not the. I'm talking the GPS radio. So.
Oh, you're not getting location information.
Yes. So the GPS doesn't work when I try to navigate, you know, using the GPS.
Yeah, got it.
It doesn't work.
Got
so
it.
I try, I uninstalled the Google Maps, I use it Waze, everything, it doesn't work. So I don't think it's the software issue, I think it's the hardware. So do you know how to fix it? How do I fix it?
Yeah, if it is the hardware, there's no way that you can fix it. But first, let's see if you can, if you really have... if the GPS really is broken, there's I believe an Android app called GPS Status that will let you, it'll actually check the GPS and see if the radio's giving a signal. Because there's lots of reasons. It may be the radio's working, and then it's not getting to the apps for some reason. So try downloading GPS Status in your Android phone and see if your GPS is on or off. Make sure it's on, by the way. You can turn it off. I think you know this, but just, you know, to be complete, I'll mention that you can turn it off in the settings, and so make sure it's turned on. The other thing, of course, is you have to give your apps permission, location permission. If you at any point said no, the Maps apps won't work so well. So make sure all of that. The other thing, before I would give up on the hardware, is you probably could might want to reset the phone, you know, get it back to factory data status. And that's in the settings.
Yeah.
You did do that.
I did that, yeah.
And it still didn't come back.
It works sometimes. It's not all the time. Sometimes it works fine.
Oh, interesting.
Other times, like 90% of the time, it doesn't work.
So that sounds to me like the GPS is working, but the antenna is flaky. The Mini, you know, doesn't have a lot of area for antennas. Do you notice that it works better outside or, you know, when you're not holding it or...
Not really. Doesn't make that much difference. I tried outside in my car. You know, it's...
The bottom line is, if there's something wrong with the hardware...
Mm-hmm.
Well, Samsung would say bring the phone... You know, the phone's broken. Bring it in and we'll fix it. It's out of warranty now. It's a couple years old. But maybe a third party, if you found a good third party phone repair place. Those guys are pretty amazing. So they can't actually swap in chips and stuff. I mean, it's not easy. But before you give up on the phone, you might find a good third-party phone repair place that not most of them do iPhones, but some of them do Samsungs, and see what they can see.
Okay.
But if it's hardware, that's a much harder thing to fix because a phone is, you know, it's all solid state. It's, you know, it's not like a PC where you could swap a card out. Although, you know, having gone inside earlier iPhones, not in the last year or two, which I think by now they're so thin that they're really, you can't, they're not, they're no more modules, I would guess. But I've seen a few years ago, probably an iPhone 4 or iPhone 5, you can open, I think it was an iPhone 5, you can open up and there are little modules, you know, you can unplug and plug in to add certain functionality. I don't know if there's a GPS module, and I don't know at all what Samsung's doing, but you could check it out. Now, good news, because the S8 comes out this week, I'm getting mine on Friday. I ordered the S8 Plus because I want to see how big can be. That means the S7s will drop in price. And you might be able to get a really good deal on an upgraded Samsung phone. They don't have S8 Minis yet. They will, though, if you want a really small phone, obviously. I think they will do it, but the S7 Minis are out. Take a look at those. You might be able to get them much less expensively than you think. And that's a pretty big jump. I was not a big fan of the S5. But the S7 was much improved. Best camera out there. In fact, the S8's camera is very similar. May not be a lot better than the S7 camera, but that's not a bad thing because the S7 camera was so darn good. So it might be time to look at a new phone as well. these things are really not designed to last too long. They're getting banged around a lot. I think all the phone manufacturers assume a 2-year life cycle. Maybe that, is it kind of a chicken and an egg, or in this case, a bunny and an egg question? Which came first? Did the carriers offer 2-year deals on the phones? You know, you're eligible for an upgrade every other year because the phones don't last more than 2 years? Or do they build the phones to last 2 years because they think that's when everybody's going to trade it in? In other countries like Canada, it's 3 years. So I'm having this, I have to think that the it's the phone manufacturer itself that just says, you know, we don't expect these to last more than 2 or maybe 3 years. It is. Somebody says in the chat room, Wallace says in the chat room, that's a very expensive cycle. It is an expensive cycle. I mean, this is the most expensive computer you're buying these days. In many cases, if you're buying a, you know, what they call flagship phones, if you're buying the top of the line from Apple or Samsung or LG or HTC, you're spending $700, $800, maybe $900 or $1,000 or $1,000. So every other year or every third year, $1,000, that's a lot of money. Now you know why Apple has $250 billion in the bank. It's a lot of money. And I'm not convinced it's worth the upgrade. You'll never hear me laugh, and you know, I'll never say as it's a million. You only have an S5. Wow, that's 2 years old. No, I mean your PC, your desktop computer, you'd expect to keep it 5 years, right? Your television set 10 years. What makes these phones so? Well, you are carrying it around. I mean, laptops don't last as long either, right? Because they're banged around a little bit, but. I don't know why. I wish they didn't expect us to spend this much money every couple of years, but they do. They really do. And it's kind of set up that way, isn't it? Monica is on the line from Hollywood. Hello, Monica. North Hollywood.
Hi, Leo. Hi. I like to listen to you when I sew because I like to use humanity's oldest technology and newest at the same time.
Nice. Do you have a traditional sewing machine or do you have one of those computerized sewing machines?
Traditional with just a tiny computer.
Yeah. Because nowadays you can hook it up to a... I had a neighbor who had an embroidery machine. She could take any picture and put it on a hat.
I know.
It's kind of amazing. It's everywhere.
I know.
Are you a Pfaff sewer or a Singer sewer or...
Brother.
Brother, baby.
I know.
And what do you sew?
Mending, clothes, upholstery.
How fun.
Whatever needs to be sewn.
I think that's such a great skill. Those sewing, my mom sewed, but it is a dying art, and it scared the heck out of me because that thing goes fast, and the bobbin, and there's a big needle on. I will get to your question in a second. We got to take a little break if you don't mind.
Thank you.
You know the advertisers, they really want to get in on the act, and you know what? We have great advertisers, so I encourage them to do so. So just hang on,
Thank you, Monica.
And we're going to pay some bills, and when we come back, I'll find out what else you do when you're listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I should mention our sponsor. What am I thinking? We got a great sponsor this hour. It's Texture. If you are, if you're a magazine lover, I know I am. It's probably something you don't like about magazines, and that would be the clutter. And I even feel guilty because I subscribed to magazines for a long time, like the New Yorker, and you know that's a weekly magazine, and I'd never read it all, and there'd be a pile of New Yorkers, and I got to the point where I just felt guilty about getting it in the first place. So all that guilt is gone now because I have Texture. Texture is a magazine. It's like Netflix for magazines. 200-plus magazines, the best magazines in the world, for one flat rate, $10 a month. You can read them all. And you get every page on the newsstand edition, plus back issues, plus bonus features like video that you just can't get in a print magazine. And I have to tell you, if you love photography, and they have a lot of photography magazines, you're going to really love the images on Texture because they look better than the print version. So if you're a National Geographic fan and you love the photos in National Geographic, they look so good on your iPad. Your iPad, your iPhone, your Android device, Texture is searchable. You can mark what you like, check out back issues, and view bonus video content. They've made it easy to find the articles you want to read, daily recommendations, exclusive interactive features, videos, and more. And man, I probably wouldn't subscribe to some of these. Like, I probably wouldn't get Travel and Leisure, but I love browsing the pages of Travel and Leisure. It's so much fun. And Variety and, the Billboard Hot 100 and Sports Illustrated. There's only a few times a year I really want to read Sports Illustrated, but I've got it. I love Texture. You will too. We got a free trial for you. 2 weeks free if you go to texture.com/twit. Read up on the latest tech stories. Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, get the scoop on the new must-have drone. Great tech journalism. Great journalism in general. Fiction in The New Yorker. Wonderful stuff. The cartoons, they're all there. Texture.com/twit. Try it free for 2 weeks right now. Leo Laporte. I mean, I got to wait for the post. The tech guy. A little late. This must be the long album version. On the line, Monica from North Hollywood. Better stop playing it right now because it gets bad later on. Hi, Monica. So you're a sewer sitting there with your brother and you're sewing. You're working on projects. You're listening to the radio. I like that.
Thank you. But here's my question. When I watch TV, I don't just sit still and watch a show. I sort of bounce around from room to room.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know, is it more energy efficient to leave my TVs on, or should I turn them off when I leave the room?
So you want to leave them on in every room. And then as you move around, the TV's on when you get there.
Yeah, because it takes so long for them to warm up now.
Right. What kind of TV?
Right,
so TVs do use a significant amount of power. Some more than others. The old school CRTs used a lot of power. Plasmas use a lot of power. LCD, not so much. I presume you have LCD flat panel TVs.
Yeah, I have one Vizio, I have a Panasonic, and I have what is it? It's a Kodak. It's one of those ones they just slap their name on.
Right, Kodak. That's kind of funny. You can tell how much they use. It's typically around, it would be close to around a light bulb's worth of power, 60 to 80 watts. Not much more than that. So would you leave a light on in the room as you walk in and out? Probably. Especially if it took a while for the light to warm up.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. I mean, it's, there's two reasons why you don't want to do it. One is, of course, the cost, and the cost is pennies. The other is, we want to save the world. So I got solar panels. Now I leave my TV on all day. Doesn't hurt the TV. In fact, it's probably better to leave it on than to turn it off and on.
Okay.
There is a device, if you're really curious, I know you're not this curious, but you could get, called the kilowatt, that you plug in between the TV plug and the plug in the wall. You put that in there, and it will tell you exactly how much power it uses. There's a new device I've seen advertised. I kind of have to get one. That claims that one device you put on the circuit panel will tell you all the different things. But I can't imagine it would do that. It might tell you what each breaker is using. In any event, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay.
Besides, they're keeping you company.
Yeah, they're my friends.
They're my friends. Do you have different shows on in each room? No, you have one show on.
One show.
Yeah. You could just do the audio. It's the screen that uses all the power.
Right.
So if you didn't care about the picture, if it's like, morning shows like the Today Show and Regis and Kelly. I'm sorry, it's not Regis and Kelly anymore. Live with Kelly. They're really designed to be audio friendly because they know you're busy. They know you're doing exactly what you're doing, which is moving around a lot. They do them almost like radio shows with pictures. So you can probably if you really wanted to save power, I would turn the screen off. That's the big power user in the TV. Interesting question. Now, I have a great picture of you, Monica, in your house, sewing, listening, watching. What shows are you watching when you got the TV on?
I'm a news junkie, either local news or CNN.
Yeah, this will poison our minds. This has poisoned our minds now. Too much cable news. I know how you feel, though. I can't stop watching. But I feel like we get a disaster mentality from that, right? Because
especially from the local news.
Yeah, news is only bad news. Good news is not really very interesting. So, and so, what you're getting is a funnel that's focusing all the bad news into your ear. And so I kind of, I mean, I'm a junkie too. When I get home, the first thing I do is turn on cable news. But I really shouldn't, I'm thinking.
I know. You're right.
Right? We should have, I don't know what. What else would you put on there? I don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
Not Game of Thrones. That's
blood.
It's a lot of blood. I don't know what happy things.
It's my options.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. No, leave it on. It's nice. It's people talking to you. This is why, by the way, this is why radio will never die. Because we're here keeping you company.
That's what I think.
And I used to do news talk. Maybe my prejudice against news, cable news, is that when I did news talk, I would come home with a stomach ache. It was just, So I decided not to do news talk anymore. Just talk about the toy store, the computers and technology. That's the fun stuff.
I remember from watching Tech TV. I go back that far.
Oh, well, you know, we have a podcast, a video channel that broadcasts all around the clock called Twit. And it's basically Tech TV. It's twit.tv, and you can just leave that on. And it's only good news.
I'll check it out.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Take care. I got to snuck a plug in there. Nice job, Leo. During the week, I only do the radio show on the weekends. During the week, I do other shows. But it's all about tech. That's very much like the radio show. It's about technology. We talk about Macs. We have a Mac show and a Windows show and a security show and news show and all that stuff. Actually, I'm very proud of it. We have an interview show I do every Monday called Triangulation. And it's kind of big thinkers in technology. And we just got nominated for a Webby, which is nice. Should I shill for votes? Oh, why not, Leo? Everybody else is. I'm talking to myself now. We're in first place, but we're competing against four or five other tech podcasts. So if you would do me an honor, if you watch the show, if you never watch the show, well, I guess you can't vote for it. But go to twit.to/webbies2017 and cast your vote. Vote for the one you like the best. Wink, wink. Next on the line, Marcello from Northridge. Hello, Marcello.
Hello, Mr. Leo. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Do you say Marcello or Marcello?
We're in America, so you say Marcello.
I'll say Marcello.
We can go to Italy anytime.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling.
Thank you for helping me.
My pleasure. What can I do?
Windows, Microsoft installed the latest Windows 10 build. When it completed, I had no sound, no audio.
Yay.
Anywhere.
All right, so a couple of questions for you. You were already using Windows 10, or you went from Windows 7 or 8 to 10?
No, I'm one of the first ones to take the free operating system.
Okay, so you did the free upgrade, and as soon as you went to 10, it broke.
No.
You're saying you've been running 10 for a year.
Yes.
And you just got the new Creators update, which is now coming out.
Right.
And as soon as you got the Creators update, which is, you know, it's a bigger update than normal. It's they're going to do these once or twice a year, big updates. Your sound, boop, kaplooey.
Right. Everything was fine before Windows installed the new build. The minute it completed, I tried to play music on my players. Nothing. On YouTube, Facebook, nothing would play. Not even my computer sounds would play. I tried everything I could. The drivers were good. The sound card's good.
Do you have a separate sound card?
Sound Blaster X5.
Ah, okay, I can help you. I know exactly what's wrong. But hang on, because we got to take a break. I will talk to you off air as you hear the local news. And we'll come back with more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So there was a well-known bug with Sound Blaster cards. I thought it would be fixed. This was a bug that was discovered in the beta of the Creators update. And maybe they didn't fix it. But because you have a Sound Blaster, I think what happened is it changes the bit depth. And you need to go into the Sound Blaster control panel,
right?
And change it back to bit depth to 16-bit.
16-bit.
Yep. Okay. It also may be an incompatibility if you have the X-Fi Sound Blaster stuff. That may be an incompatibility as well.
Okay.
So you may need to disable X-Fi. But try 16-bit first.
Right.
And then if not, I'm looking at a thread that says, well, maybe it does work with 24-bit, but maybe the X-Fi is the problem. So if you're on 24-bit, go to 16. And if you have X-Fi, if that doesn't work, disable it. And this is a thread. This goes back to the early days of the Creators Update, but which, you know, in theory, they've fixed all that stuff. But it happens, doesn't it?
Okay.
It happens a lot. Yeah.
Now, Master Leo, this is what happened. I tried to roll it back because the Microsoft tech couldn't help me. They wanted to escalate it. So the rollback failed.
Now you're hosed.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing because, like you see, recommend, you know, reset your, reinstall your Windows every now and then.
Yeah.
So the only option it gave me was to reset. It wiped all my programs, and I slowly reinstalled some that I needed.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Did that fix the sound?
Yes, I got my sound back. But the problem now is Microsoft keeps trying to push the Windows 10 build
1.7
on me. It doesn't give me any option to tell it to take a hike. So
you can defer it, but you can't. So part of the deal with the upgrade is you have to take updates. You can defer them, and they lengthen the deferral time, I think, to a month. But eventually, you have to do it.
Right, that's what I'm doing. Okay,
but so in other words, rollback fixed the sound issue. You're worried if you do the creative update again, it'll go away again.
Right. The resetting the PC, totally wiping it and reinstalling Windows
fixed
10
it.
Is what. Because I guess it. I don't know. Set the. I don't know. I just don't know.
So eventually you're going to have to take the Creators Update. Windows Home gives you no deferral time. Windows Pro gives you a month of deferral time. If you have to do it, go ahead and do it, because I think the Sound Blaster, these are known issues with the Sound Blaster, and that there are settings that will fix it.
Okay, great.
So at some point, you're going to have to bite the bullet and do it. I mean, I understand your reluctance.
Right, right. Yeah, because I love my sound.
Yeah, yeah. So you know what I would do? I would maybe defer it as long as you can.
Uh-huh.
And keep an eye peeled on the forums for Sound Blaster issues with the Creators Update.
Okay.
And wait until you see fixed.
Right.
Fixed. And
good luck.
And then you say, oh, and how was that? So I'm seeing one fixed, but this was the insider's ring, people who were doing the Creators Update before the official release, and that was to switch the bit depth from 24-bit to 16-bit. And maybe turning off X-Fi. So those things may be fixed in a better way, like Sound Blaster releases a new driver, which is what really needs to happen.
Okay, right. I always do. I have an updater program for that. So
good.
If there's one, I'll get it.
So chances are, if you've got 30 days deferral, there's nothing in the Creators Update you have to have. If you can defer it, wait for a Sound Blaster update, and keep an eye on the forums.
Right, because like I said, before this, everything is fine.
Great.
It's great. Yeah.
And there's some stuff in the Creators Update that's good. I mean, it's always good to, you know, I understand Microsoft's point, and we want people to stay updated for security reasons. I understand that.
Yeah, that is my concern also.
Yeah, that's reasonable. But but you're getting the hot fixes. So even, you know, you on Patch Tuesday was Tuesday, and you got the hot fixes anyway, whether you took the Creators Update or not. So I don't think you're at risk at this point. You're fine.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you, Master Leo. Have
my pleasure, Marcelo.
Happy Resurrection Day.
Happy Easter. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, PC guy, I don't think that works anymore in the Creators. You're right, he can continue to do it because he doesn't have the Creators Update. But I think they changed that metered thing. I'm trying to remember. We were talking about it on Windows Weekly. Well, hey, how you doing? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, we're going to talk about tech for the next hour. Computers, the internet, home theater. Smartphones, smart watches, digital photography, augmented reality, self-driving cars, that kind of stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5555. 1-800-636, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I finished up with Marcelo during the break. He had a computer. He'd upgraded to Windows 10 last year, and he got the Windows 10 Creators Update, which is slowly rolling out. For some of us got it already. Some of us, like me, were impatient and installed it ahead of time. And then others will be getting it later. In fact, it may take months to roll it out because Microsoft tries to run a compatibility check on your computer before they'll let you, you know, take it. So they want to make sure everything's going to work. The Creators Update is what now happens instead of the next version of Windows. Microsoft has already said Windows 10 is the last version. This is a new way of thinking of Windows. They call it Windows as a service, not Windows as an operating system you install on a computer, but instead something that's on your computer that is updated regularly, free, kind of forever. And they've said we will do updates. Initially, they said 3 times a year, big updates. It was twice last year, I think, right? No, maybe just once. They did the anniversary update. The Creators Update is coming out now, and maybe there'll be another one in the fall. That's fine. I'm not in a hurry. These updates are bigger than just the regular monthly patches. These are new features, some changed features. Not a big deal. There's some cosmetic differences. You won't notice a huge difference. I don't. There's a gaming mode now that will allow you to kind of turn off notifications while you're playing games on Windows. Still, probably the number one platform for gaming. Nothing to die for. Nothing to say. I got to have it. So Marcelo, I told Marcelo, defer it because his Sound Blaster won't work with it. I said, defer it. He rolled back and he was all working again. I did find that there was a bug with Sound Blaster cards, and that bug can be fixed in the settings, but I said, here's what I would do. You can't put off these upgrades forever. Part of the deal, if you took the free Windows upgrade, in fact, it's the deal from now on with Windows 10, is you've got to, unless you're doing it in business, but if you're a home user, you've got to take the updates because Microsoft wants everybody to be secure, I guess, and use new features as they roll them out. And that way, you know, by the way, developers are more likely to write software because they know most people are running this version of Windows. That's easier to write the software. So they're going to push you into it. But you can defer for some time. Defer, I told them, and keep an eye on the forums. Look for Sound Blaster issues. Look for an updated driver from Creative to get you a new Sound Blaster driver. Look for fixes, in other words. And then once you say, you know, you see somebody posting, oh, Creators Update broke my Sound Blaster, but this fixes it. Or Sound Blaster says, hey, we got a new version that works great with the Creators Update. Then go ahead and do the update. There's no urgency. He was a little worried, well, am I insecure? Because he's heard me say over and over again, you don't do the patches, your system is insecure. You've got to do the patches. Well, updates like this are different than the patches. You're still getting patches, hot fixes to Windows 10. In fact, Tuesday, the latest updates came out, and that wasn't Creators Update. That was just the latest updates. So you're secure. Don't worry about it. And this is the new way of Windows. We're just going to get used to this. And when you have a Windows PC, Microsoft once or twice a year is going to give you a big update, and you'll be actually the other big change is there's a new program called Microsoft Paint 3D that's actually pretty cool. If you did get the Creators Update, Try the Microsoft Paint 3D. It's pretty neat. You can download models. I downloaded a model of a hamburger that's in 3D. And you can rotate it. You can make it bigger or larger. You can use it in your images. And that's kind of neat. I guess this is a part of Microsoft's move towards virtual reality and augmented reality in 3D. They want to do a 3D interface so that things are, you know, you can look behind the menus and, you know, they're floating out in space in front of you. They call it the Microsoft Windows Holographic. And, of course, they've been making a device, which they say they sell right now for developers. They say it won't be available for consumers until 2019, called a HoloLens. But it's pretty neat. And I think by 2019, you're going to see a number of these devices. You wear them. They look like glasses, kind of visory. There's a whole computer in it. Running Windows 10, and it's superimposed. You still see the real world. You're walking around. It's just like sunglasses, maybe not quite so dark, but they're a little darker. You're walking around. You're seeing the real world, but they can superimpose images on this, like a heads-up display, you know, in a race car. And that could be a menu from Windows. That could be your applications. I saw an app that was really cool. If you're an air traffic controller, you're looking at your office, your desk, maybe your radar screen, but you also see a three-dimensional projection of the airfield and planes coming in. And on top of those planes, information about them, their direction, their speed, their number. That's cool. So I think this is coming our way in the next few years. This holographic interface. So Microsoft's getting your feet wet a little bit with this Paint 3D. Marty in Los Angeles is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Leo. Well, initially all I had was a tech problem. After listening to you, now I've got to find a place to get some hot matzo ball soup.
Oh, yeah. That's been off the air, but you're hearing the... but I don't know why. I have a hankering. Well, it's Passover. Yeah. You know, a lot of... You know, I saw the matzahs on the shelf. That got me going, got me thinking.
Right. That'll be problem number two. But
we have an expert in the chat room, Dr. Mom, who is instructing me on the techniques of making floating matzo balls.
Floating matzo balls.
Yes. She says the key is to chill the matzo mix before you form it into a ball and then drop it into boiling hot water. Or a soup, actually.
Sounds like a good idea because that stuff can stick with you for a long time.
I know. there's quite a schism between the floaters and the sinkers. There's some people like the sinkers, you know. It's to each his own. What can I do for you?
Okay. I have a Samsung Note 4, and when I make a call, it immediately goes to a black screen. And then I have to press, like, the power button, and then I can then continue with the call. Same thing when I receive a call.
Not good. It's not crashing, right? Because you don't lose the call.
Correct.
The screen goes blank.
Right. Absolute black screen, and then hit that power button, and it comes on again. And it's more annoying than anything else.
So I'm thinking what's happening. There is something called a proximity sensor in that phone and many phones. The idea is, you know, when you're on a phone call, there's buttons, you know, the hold button, the mute button, dial buttons and stuff. And the idea is if you're going to put the phone to your head, you don't want your cheek to accidentally hit those buttons. So there's a sensor in the phone that detects that you're holding the phone to your ear and blackens the screen. And
the problem is that when we do it, we put it on speaker. So we're not even holding it.
No, I understand. It's doing it when it shouldn't do it. It's doing it when you're just holding it.
Right.
Because you wouldn't even know that it's doing it if you're holding it to your cheek. You wouldn't know until you know. So the fact that you could see it go black, but it sounds to me like a faulty proximity sensor.
Okay.
So it's not a big deal because you're waking it up. And that's exactly how a proximity sensor would work, too. If you press the on-off switch while you're talking, it would turn the screen on. But I understand it's annoying. I'm not sure what to say about this. In other words, how to fix it. Make sure – I'm not sure. You might want to – you'd have to Google this, Note 4 proximity sensor, where it is on the screen. It's going to be somewhere in the front.
Okay.
You know if you look at your screen, there's all sorts of kind of little weird holes and ports and stuff. So you can figure out where it is. Make sure that area is clean. Rebooting the phone might fix it. Resetting the phone might fix it. Or it might be physically broken, in which case you're just going to have to live with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. I love my Blue Apron. We got a Blue Apron box waiting for us when we get home. You get three meals in a box. Three meals for two, or three meals for the family of four. Three separate dinners. And we gave one... the in-laws, because they like Blue Apron, too. I think we're going to have to get them their Blue Apron subscription. It's just great. So what do you get? Blue Apron is a food delivery. They're the largest fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country because they're the best. They package up amazing ingredients with the recipes for making a meal that's just, you know, incredible. And they do it for less than it would cost to go shopping for yourself. They say you're about 60 to 7% more expensive in the grocery store because they have a lot more overhead. So inside, you get always fresh, never frozen, both meats and fishes, produce from local farms, sustainably grown. Their freshness guarantee promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives perfect and ready to cook, or they'll make it right. And you never are surprised, because you can always, you know, it's not a subscription. You get a box when you want it. There's no weekly commitment. And you pick it from the menu. So you go look at the menu, and there's, as I said, two-person plans and family plans. Family plans are for four, but they also have more kid-friendly ingredients. We found, actually, that there's the two of us plus our son. The two-person plan actually can feed three. That's actually worked out quite well. We'll often do this. Look at this. Spiced beef sandwiches and garlic labneh. That's that bread, right? With arugula and date salad. Oh. Taiwanese-style chicken. So you're making foods from around the world. Food with ingredients you may never have tried before. But it's all delicious and amazing. Pick the menus that you like. Make it in less than 40 minutes. Delicious, fresh, wholesome food. You're going to love it. Spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. Or sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. Parmesan crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. I'm kidding. My mouth is watering. Get started right now. You're going to get your first three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping when you go to blueapron.com/techguy. We love it. We get it every week, and it's just so great. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody, and they do it. blueapron.com/techguy. You're going to love it. Purple eggs all dyed, ready to go for the Easter egg roll. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's not purple eggs? I always thought it was purple eggs. 8888, ask Leo. Dennis in Santa Monica. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've called before a couple of crises before.
Well, I'm here. I'm your crisis counselor. I'm here.
Yeah, and thanks for being there.
Well, what's your crisis today?
Well, I'm having a flaky hard drive, an external hard drive, a Western Digital, my passport, 500 gig. And the other day, it started doing something weird. It shows up halfway in the eject utility, but not in Explorer. So, and then when I try to eject it, what happens is the computer locks up, and you can't shut down the computer.
Yeah, so it's a USB drive, and you're not seeing it. You can't see it, but something can see it because you could eject it.
Well, yeah, except for the computer doesn't want to eject it.
Right. Something's messed up. That's the technical term. It's messed up. What's happening is it's a USB device that's not fully mounting. It's mounting enough so that your computer says, well, I could unmount this. But it's not mounting enough so that it can see what's on the drive. It probably is not the drive, by the way. This is the good news. Your drive's probably intact. It's probably, it's a couple of things. It could be that if it's physical, if it's hardware, it could be the USB interface. Now, that can range from the card in the Western Digital box, the cable, or your USB hardware on your computer. So it could be a hardware problem in any one of those three things, or it could be, and is more likely to be, a software problem. So the first thing I would try is plug it into a different USB port. Believe it or not, even though, you know, it seems like there's one chain of USB, many computers have multiple USB controllers. So try all your USB ports. Make sure all of them do the same thing. The other thing might be a problem is the USB drivers themselves. So if that doesn't work, try a different cable. Actually, let's eliminate the easy things. Try a different cable. Make sure it's not a cable problem. And then if Western Digital, does it offer special controller software that you install?
Well, let me tell you more of the story. And by the way, it's interesting you say about trying a different cable. It's a USB 3.0 cable, and it might be proprietary to Western Digital. So
no,
I don't
it's
know.
Not.
So I don't know if I can get another
no,
one.
No, it's
I
not.
I can.
It's not proprietary. Have you tried? One more question. Have you tried it on another computer to see if it can mount on another computer?
Yeah, I was going to tell you the story. So I tried it on my neighbor's computer, and it was having similar mounting difficulties.
All right.
So the next thing I did is I contacted Western Digital, and I talked to this tech, and his first question was, can you open it? Can it show up in the Manage utility? Well, that's kind of like Explorer. It wasn't really showing up there. So he had me download and install this thing called Data Lifeguard Diagnostic for Windows. And in the process of doing that, another weird thing happened. The drive started showing up in the Manage or utility or Explorer, just as if there was no problem. So I said, well, that's interesting. It's showing up now. Well, he had me run the utility, the diagnostic, and in the first test, it passed, but then he had me do the extended test. The extended test, it failed. So I guess there's some corrupted sectors. Now, I think I'm in a position to take the data off because, well...
Why do you think there's corrupted sectors?
Because the diagnostic said so.
Okay.
And it says something to that effect.
So if it's a USB interface problem, which it sounds like, there's no way that the diagnostic software knows what's going on the drive. So I wouldn't assume that the diagnostic is correct.
Well, I'm suspect of my USB system on my laptop computer because my laptop computer is not 100%. So I'm thinking maybe I should test the cable or maybe I should just order a new drive.
Well, here's what you can do. Is you can open the case, probably void your warranty. Open, but you know you're gonna. It's not working, so who cares?
Yeah, right.
Open the case, take out the drive. That is a normal non-USB drive. The problem is the USB interface is getting in the way, preventing you from really knowing if it's a problem with the drive or the USB interface. So let's take the drive out of the USB case. Now, if you want to spend the $30, you can go out and get a device that from NewerTech that will allow you to mount that drive as a standard SATA drive in your computer or use a USB interface. Or you can open up, if you have a tower computer, if you have a laptop, this isn't so useful. If you have a tower computer, you can open up, put the drive in the computer and look at it there and see if you could see data on the drive. A tech could do this in 5 minutes. See if the drive looks okay. If it does, then it's a USB enclosure issue.
I see. I'm thinking if I open the enclosure, I can't put it back in the enclosure. This doesn't look like the kind of enclosure that you can put back together again.
That's of minimal value. You can buy another USB enclosure. They're cheap. So okay. Western Digital, their business is drives. This whole Western Digital, my book and all this stuff, is just ways to sell drives. And so a USB drive is very handy, but it's really just a normal SATA drive stuck in a USB enclosure. So you could go, in fact, probably the easiest thing to do would be go buy a new USB enclosure, put the drive in. Is there anything on the drive you really need?
Well, my CC Witness MP3s are all stored on this drive.
All right, yeah, so you don't want to lose those. Okay. So that's really I should have asked that right up front. If you care about what's on the drive, then these are the more extreme things means you can go to get what's on the drive. If you don't care, you can just buy a new drive, as you say. But you can go online, go to Newegg and buy a USB drive enclosure. You got to get one that's right for the kind of drive you have. Is it a full size or is it little?
It's a little one. It's the My Passport fiber.
Yeah, I think the Passports use laptop drives. So you want a you got to get a drive enclosure that's right for the kind of drive that's in there.
I think I have one of those put away somewhere.
Oh, nice. Open it up. Yeah, if you had any old USB drives, just swap it into a new enclosure. What we're trying to do is figure out what's going wrong. The drive diagnostic software is probably not an expert witness, reuse that word, because it's limited by what it can see by the USB interface. So if the USB interface is failing, the drive might look like it's failing. What you got to do is separate the two and put that drive in a known good USB enclosure and then check it. You know, then boot it. If it boots fine, then the USB stuff failed. If it doesn't, then the drive failed. And then you now are in a new process, which is drive recovery. And depending on what's wrong with the drive, there are a variety of things you can do. My friend Steve Gibson's SpinRite is a low-level recovery tool. Works a lot with drives that just have bad sectors, which it sounds like this might be the problem. If it's a corrupt partition table or it's a, you know, a higher level file system issue, then there are tools for that as well. So drive recovery is the next step, but only do that once you've, and you can't do drive recovery very well through a USB interface. So only do that once you've made certain that the USB interface isn't the issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Please don't take my Kodachrome away. Yes, it's the time once again for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, joins us all the way from Germany to talk about the Viewfinder Villa in beautiful...
The Viewfinder Villa, yes.
Beautiful downtown Germany to talk about photography. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Are you recovered from your Tibetan journey?
Oh, yes. Well, the last one was in Siberia, so...
That's what I meant. The Baikal German. Yeah,
the Baikal one. Oh, yeah.
And I... Hello. Somebody's talking to me over here. I don't know who that... That sounded like the Windows machine. That was weird. Wants me to unlock it. What's locked? No, I was wondering because about now, you know, you've recovered from jet lag and everything, and now you're probably starting to wish you could go back.
Well, you know what? I will go to another cold area pretty soon in about a month, and that's Svalbard, which is all the way up in the Arctic. So... That's
I'm told you could
thing.
Actually move there if you want. That's a free zone.
Possibly, but I'm not sure I want to do that.
Well, just keep that in mind.
I think I'll enjoy it for a couple of weeks and then probably happy to go back.
No visa required, no immigration papers. You can just move there. All right. So
I can just go there. Yeah.
I sense from the email I received from you.
We have an assignment review.
That it is time to review the assignment.
Absolutely.
So what was the assignment?
The turn assignment. Turn as in one of them, at least 20 different meanings that word has. So people interpreted that in all sorts of different ways. And I have chosen three pictures to have
nice.
A quick look at.
Good.
The first one is by Greg Chez 2000.
All right.
And... let's not talk about the title because that's IMG_0086. So the first one is a kind of picture that I see a lot, and I generally like these kind of pictures because you have beautiful leading lines. We're looking at railway tracks that lead somewhere in the distance. Now, two things about that. First of all, if you have leading lines, it's always a good idea to include something that those lines lead to. So they need to go somewhere, not just disappear somewhere in the distance. So that would be my suggestion to make this picture
like,
better.
Like have a tunnel mouth there or something, you're saying.
Or a train or something. Okay. The second thing I need to talk about just briefly is do not shoot on railway tracks. This is next to railway tracks, but shooting on railway tracks is really dangerous. And we have at least once a month, there is some news about some photographer or some model who used railway tracks to create leading lines and then have a model on the railway lines getting caught
by
a train.
Well, he's a little off the track, which is good.
He's off the track, and that's fine. So Greg Chez 2000, don't be worried. But yeah.
We don't want to lose any listeners.
If you think about shooting on train tracks, don't do it, because you will often not hear the train approach,
right.
And you are busy with other things.
It's tempting. It's tempting, but don't.
It is very tempting because it's very photogenic. But again, it's a kind of a dangerous, really dangerous place to shoot. Second picture by Philip Northeast, The Pipes Zinc Works. So. It shows, Zinc Works, it's a factory of some sort. Lots of pipes, lots of different, containers and some steam and a beautiful sky. And I just like the little Where's Waldo nature of that picture. You know, there's lots to look at, lots to explore, lots to find. The other thing I find interesting is he shot this with a bit of a telephoto. And at 180 millimeters to be precise. And what that does is, even though he's below these structures, you do not really see any falling lines, any converging lines. If he had shot this with a wide angle, he'd have to be much closer to the structure, shoot from way further below, and that would kind of make the whole thing collapse into itself when you look at how the lines then work. So if you want to shoot something like that, a longer focal length makes a lot of sense because that really kind of keeps it more, well, more straight up.
You know, it's interesting about this. I agree with you. A lot of times I'll take a picture and it's too busy. And I go, oh, you can't, you know, this is just a mush because there's so much going on in it. This is a very busy picture, but for some reason,
it looks very orderly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's fascinating. And why is it you think that this works, the busyness works here?
Well, I mean, you have some interesting structures, some bigger structures, like the two big round structures in the left middle. And those kind of act a bit like a subject. So you always have this resting place to go back to with your eyes. You kind of have this this anchor.
Yeah, if you took that out, you wouldn't know where to look. I think that makes sense. Yeah.
And then from there you go explore, and I immediately go to the right where you see this yellow structure of some sort, which is kind of a warm color, a warning color, so that attracts some attention, but it's much smaller, so it's not as strong. But that's something to explore. I like the smoke on the left top. I like those pipes on the right top, how they kind of, the ones in front of the sky. I like those a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of repetition in the picture as well. You see a lot of the same structures repeat over and over and over again. And I think that's what makes it so interesting.
I agree with you. There's something, it's fascinating. You want to stare at it for a while. Yeah.
This one, I would definitely print out in as big as you can with the amount of megapixels and hang it up on the wall. That's a picture to stand in front and just spend 10 minutes looking at it.
Yeah. Very nice. Philip Northeast, well done.
And the third one is by Brendan Burkett, Turns Begin with the Eyes. And he did two things. Well, first of all, it's a black and white photo. There's a bartender on the photo. She's just reaching over the bar to arrange some stuff on top of the bar. And she's just turning her head. So that's a turn in there. And it's a very reduced picture in terms of what's on it. I mean, it's very dark. It's very contrasty. So that's a night scene. The other thing he did is he shot this on film and then he scanned the entire film. So you don't just see the picture. You see the sprocket holes around the picture. You see the print on the edge of the frame. So that adds a total, kind of a completely additional layer on top of that photo, and that is what I like about it, because it adds this, well, it creates a bit of a distance between you and the photo, because all of a sudden you have this idea, wait a minute, that's not just a photo, that's a film strip, so that's a piece of film that you could actually hold in your hand. And he writes in the description, trying to be cool by including the outer parts of the film scan. There is something with film photographers that sometimes they actually like to include parts of that outer frame because it kind of also proves that they didn't like mess with the picture too much. They didn't crop it. They framed it in camera that way. So you kind of prove that this way. And I think that's a bit what that is as well.
That's really cool. And two of the three were black and white, which is interesting.
Well, yeah, and they with the railway tracks, again, that probably needs a stronger subject. With that third one, I think that makes a lot of sense to have this in black and white, because what this also does is, if you look at the photo, it has this nice grain structure, which is what happens with film when you expose it very low in low light and then develop it accordingly. It's probably a push development. And then it brings out the grain in the photo, and that grainy look is something that, well, at least us older ones, we're still used to that look of low light photos having that gritty look of the film grain, and that kind of goes together, and it gives it some good atmosphere. I like that.
We got a break. When we come back, I will get our assignment so we can do it again next month. Find Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice. And our assignment for next week, what do you want to do?
Didn't look Duke didn't look at the clock. I talked too much.
Sorry. I looked at the clock. Somebody has to.
The next assignment is in line with the two before. Is another word with a lot of meanings. Set. S-E-T.
S-E-T. Wow. People are really not, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of turn in all three of those pictures. There was enough.
That's probably what you get with a word that has 20 different meanings.
Right. There was enough.
So that one more of these, and then I'll go back to more two terms that are a bit easier to identify as just one thing.
I like it. I don't mind.
All right.
Thank you, Christopher. We'll see you next week.
Talk to you again next week.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Let's go to our next call, Ronette in Norco. Hey, Ronette.
Yes, hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, good, good. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for hanging on.
You know, my question is about digital cameras.
Oh, good.
I'd like to upgrade my digital camera. Right now, I have two, the Nikon 3300 and the Lumix G.
Excellent.
And I just kind of want to upgrade it just a little bit more. I do a lot of photo shoots and party events, so I just want to get a little bit of a better camera.
So you both of those are point and shoots, but they're both high-end point and shoots. They're the kind of point and shoots professional photographers buy so they have something in their bag or their pocket when they don't want to carry around their big camera. So you're serious about photography. You spent money on these.
Right.
When you say you want to get better, there are a couple of next steps. There's two next steps, really. You could go to a camera that has interchangeable lenses. Your cameras have built-in zoom, but one lens.
Right,
the lens is
built-in. I do have those. Are both interchangeable lenses.
The G is? Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so then you've already done that step. Those are both, are they micro four thirds? Do you know?
The Lumixes, yes.
Yeah, okay. So you have some lenses. The other thing that you can make, I apologize, I thought they were point and shoots. All right, so the other thing you can do is you can get a bigger sensor. So micro four thirds is a fairly small sensor. The next step up is something called APS-C, and then full frame sensors, and they can even get bigger than that. But those bigger sensors give you a bunch of different things. A bigger sensor collects more data, collects more light, so it's better in low light. The detail in the pictures is greater. Often the dynamic range is greater. The spread between the darkest and the lightest the camera can see is wider. All of these things really will give you a chance to make better images. So if you like Panasonic, Panasonic makes some full frame as well. If you really – so what's your budget, I guess I should ask?
Well, I don't want to go over, $2,500, so I want to stick to that.
Oh, all right. I'll tell you what I use and I like a lot. Do you want to stay mirrorless or do you want to go with a camera with a mirror in it? Have you thought about that?
I have both of them, as you know. So the mirrorless one, it does give better quality photos, but the 3300, the video is better.
Yeah.
On the 3300.
The biggest difference really is not so much the quality of the pictures. There are mirrorless cameras that have the same sensors and the same lenses and can take really good pictures. The difference more is what you're seeing as a photographer. If you're doing a DSLR with a mirror, you're actually looking through the lens. Some photographers really prefer that. It's an optical viewfinder. With the mirrorless, you're looking at a video tap, basically a video of what the lens is seeing. Now, that's nice because it can show more information on the screen, and it can even show you what the final picture is going to look like better than a through-the-lens reflex can do. But that's really a matter of taste more than, that's a preference, not so much. The quality of the images will still be good. I think you're ready for a full-frame sensor. Are you ready for a full-frame sensor?
I think so. But
I think you are.
It's not so complicated.
Well, Sony, my favorite in this is mirrorless Sonys. The Sony A7 series is remarkable. They're using, those are the sensors that Canon uses in its D800 series, its D810. It's the best sensor out there. Sony makes sensors that most of the other guys use, except for Canon.
Oh.
Canon and Nikon won't because they, I'm not going to use some Japanese sensor. Well, Canon's Japanese, but I'm not going to use this upstart Sony. I'm going to use our Canon and Nikon are both Japanese, but I think that the Sony sensors really are the best in class right now. So the Sony A7s, and there's several of these. There's an A7, an A7R, and an A7S. A7S is best in low light. It's a lower megapixel. It's only 12 megapixels. But with a full-frame sensor and only 12 megapixels, that means you've got amazing low light sensitivity. So if you take a lot of pictures indoors or in dim settings, that's an amazing camera. It's also the best video camera. It was actually A7S II. It's the newest one. The A7S Mark II just came out. That camera was used, this is pretty good testimonial, by the BBC when they filmed the 4K, the brand new version of Planet Earth 2. That was the action camera they used. So it gives you 4K high quality video. That's second to none. But it is not a super high megapixel. So the A7 R2 is a higher megapixel camera. Still gives you very good video, but not quite as good as the A7 S2. Now, the problem with these is, in both cases, you're going to be getting new lenses. Because you have Micro Four Thirds lenses and Nikon lenses, you might want to stay with those, you know, either the Lumix or the Nikon, because you can reuse those lenses.
Right. Really good lenses.
Are they? You got good glass?
I have good.
The problem is the lenses you got are for a Micro Four Thirds. Actually, if it's Micro Four Thirds, you have to get a Micro Four Thirds camera. The Nikon is not Micro Four Thirds. It's using the Nikon mount, right?
Right. That's just a regular 3300. It's not a Four Thirds.
Yeah, I think that's an APS-C sensor, if I remember. Let me look, actually. That means that those lenses are marked for a smaller sensor. So they will, when you put them on a full frame sensor, they will be less long. They'll be shorter. So a 50 millimeter lens on your camera will be more like 35 millimeters on a full frame sensor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Nikon does make, they make some of the best full-frame sensor DSLRs. They don't make, D5 would be a great choice. I mean, there's some really good choices out here. You're now getting into the professional realm. You kind of were prosumer. Yeah. And so you say video's important to you, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Because when I go to the party events, they want their event video.
One of our photographers in the chat room, Tortaloha, who does amazing Hawaiian photos, is a big Nikon shooter. He's saying, get the D5, but that's a $6,000 camera. So I'm not admittedly, you could reuse your lenses, but that's an awful lot of money. So I'm not going to recommend that. I would say, boy, this is a tough one because you have these two systems that are incompatible. One of the nice things, though, I have to say that sells me on the A7 is there's native lenses. They're called FE lenses from Sony, but you can also buy adapters that will use your existing glass. Because it's a mirrorless, it's very thin body, and the sensor's real close to the front plane, Metabones makes adapters for almost every kind of lens, and they work quite well. So, for instance, I use Leica lenses on my A7S, and I get great results. So those Metabones adapters add about $150, $200, but now you can reuse your existing lenses.
Because it extends it. Okay, and then for a portable printer that could possibly go along,
a portable's never going to give you great prints. I mean, it'll be okay.
Okay.
Everybody makes, Canon and Epson and everybody makes little tiny printers, but they're not going to do the best photography prints, right? Photographic prints. You're gonna come home if you really want to make a print.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for quick prints, like say you want to hand them out.
Uh-huh.
Right? There are, I would say both Epson and Canon make battery-powered portable printers that are fine.
Okay.
And either one would be fine. Epson's a sponsor, so I have a kind of a soft spot for them. but Canon also makes excellent portable printers.
Okay.
Where are you going? You're obviously going on a big trip.
I'm going to Mississippi and this summer. So
you're going to spend the whole summer there, and you want to take pictures of people.
Exactly.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful.
That's my goal.
Yep.
Okay.
I think I would look at the A7 series, and then if you want really good low light and an amazing video, the A7S.
I will do that.
All right.
Okay.
Take care. You. Yeah, that'd be a good street shooter. So if you're taking pictures of people, you don't want big, giant cameras in their face. It scares them. Yeah, ideally, you want a camera that doesn't really even looks like maybe a tourist camera. And that's one of the nice things about those Sonys. They're so small that you don't look like you're, a pro trying to steal their images. 8888, Ask Leo. Leo Laporte. See, I love talking photos. The tech guy. There's a lot of choices. Once you get to, now she's in that price range where, how much is an A7 going to set her back, though? Should have looked.
Over $1 billion.
That's about right. That's about her price range. The brand new one. $2,698. That's about right. That's what was in her range. And she could probably get the A7, not two, Mark One. That's $2,000. Probably worth getting a new one, though. It shoots S-Log, which is an ungraded color that is pretty amazing if you're editing it. And even the A7 is pretty good with some Metabones adapters. You'd be pretty good shape for the A7 II. Lisa stole my A7 R2. That's what she's using. She loves it, though. She really loves it. I am really tempted to get myself the 2. I don't need another camera. Not that 2, the S2. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Love Rocket Mortgage. Last time we bought a house, Lisa and I spent a month going back and forth with the lender. They wanted all this extra information. It was a nightmare. Went on and on. We thought, this will take a few weeks at most.
6 months.
We ended up doing it from the cruise ship. We were faxing him stuff. I wish we'd had Rocket Mortgage. Well, I can tell you next time, if we refi or buy a new house, that we're going to go to Rocket Mortgage. All online. It's from the best lender in the country, Quicken Loans. They're awesome. Quickenloans.com/tech guy. And they've created, because they know you're geeks, so you don't want to go into the loan office and, bring boxes of paperwork. You just want to do this quick and easy online, right? Right. So go to Rocket Mortgage. It's transparent. It's completely online. If you submit, if you need to submit pay stubs or check statements, you do that with a touch of a finger. You can do it on your phone, your iPad, your computer. You could even do it at an open house. If you're looking at houses and you go, honey, this has happened to me. Have you ever done that? We should buy this house. Okay, let me pull out my phone and we'll get approved for a loan from Rocket Mortgage. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you got a mortgage solution that fits your needs. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online at quickenloans.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage, it's fast, it's easy, it lifts the burden of applying for a home loan. Quickenloans.com/tech guy. Quickenloans.com/tech guy. Why, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet. Let's see. Digital photography, spent some time on that. Smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536 from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Our website, where everything goes, by the way. Now, I told James Aruvo he could take Easter off. I think he went to church, so he's not listening right now. But he'll listen to the show later in the day And we'll get those notes up on the website at techguylabs.com. Every question, every answer, links, information, it's all there. And an audio and video of the show after the fact, too. Josh Windisch will do our product of the week. I know what it's going to be next week, because on Friday I'm supposed to get the new Samsung Galaxy S8 Plus. I'm excited about that. You know, I feel bad for Samsung because the exploding Note problem, you know, the Note 7. But the Note 7, had it not blown up, and I understand that's a big deal, but had it not blown up, probably would have been the phone of the year last year. I mean, it was a great phone. Beautiful screen, perfect size, very fast. Stylus worked amazing. That was just a really nice phone, and it broke my heart to have to bring it back to T-Mobile and say, yeah, I guess you better keep this. But we'll get a new Note. They decided they're not going to kill the brand. They're going to do the Note 8 later this year. And this is the first phone, the Samsung Galaxy S8 and S8 Plus, they've released since the Note 7 debacle. And be interesting to see if people are willing to forgive and forget, or if they're going to be leery of buying anything. other than exploding, it was a great phone. But the point about the exploding that should be made is that it took a while, but Samsung figured out why, right? They understand what happened. It was a question of, overambition. They tried to jam too much battery into that little skinny case. And as a result, the batteries were shorting out. And when you short out a lithium battery, or any battery, really, it gets hot. And as it gets hotter and hotter, it tends to burst into flame. And remember, if you've got combustion going on inside a sealed, it was a waterproof phone, a tiny sealed area, at some point it's going to explode and spit, you know, flaming lithium all over you. So it's not a good thing. I understand. Samsung, though, took it very seriously. And I think that they even announced an 8-point plan for how they were going to make sure this didn't happen again. And I think it's probably safe to say that the Samsung batteries will from now on be the safest batteries out there, because they can't afford another problem. It cost them more than $3 billion with a B dollars in lost revenue, in the cost of, you know, taking all the phones back. It was a big deal. They don't want that to happen again. So they're taking every step possible to make sure these are safe phones, to the point of, but the Samsung Galaxy S8 will have a 3,000 milliamp hour battery. The S8 Plus with a bigger case will have a 3,500 milliamp hour battery. They're both smaller than the Note 7. They're both smaller batteries. They're trying to do less. They're going to X-ray the phones, each and every phone, before they ship it, et cetera, et cetera. They're really going to. So my question to you is that enough? Are you going to never again look at a Samsung phone? Are you going to say, no, don't want to take a chance? I think it complicates it because they do make the best Android phones out there. I think that's the case. You know, there's other very good ones. LG's very good. HTC's very good. Google itself makes the purest Android phone. Not the prettiest, but the purest Android phone. And when I traded in my Note 7, I traded it in for a Google Pixel, and I've been very happy with it. Excellent camera. It's, you know, it's up to date. It's secure. They do a good job, but it is not inspiring. And I think that, you know, Samsung makes more inspiring designs. We shall see. I'll be very curious. But Friday they start shipping. I don't even know what the pre-order, how well they did in pre-orders. I don't think they're releasing those numbers. But everybody's going to watch with interest. Can you come back after something like the exploding phone fiasco? Chris in Chicago's next. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
No problem. Hey, I don't have a question, but I did want to share an experience with you and the listeners out there regarding phone scams.
Please do.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we all receive those robocalls once in a while on our cell phones and everything. Well,
all
this one,
the time. Huh?
Yeah. This one was regarding, you know, credit counseling. So the funny thing was, the call began, they started introducing themselves as a legitimate credit counselor in the United States.
Right.
And so the call taker took my information and everything, and well, of course, it's all fabricated. I wouldn't give them anything legitimate.
So. Good. So you were suspicious right off the bat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then they asked me to put me on hold while they connected me to an agent. Well, the funny thing is they forgot to mute themselves.
And I
And, you know, being that this was...
Did they say something like, "We got a live one here, boss"?
No, it was not that conspicuous, but it did raise red flags with me.
Yeah.
Put me on hold, and I heard them dial a 10-digit number.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then they remained silent as the other line picked up, and they said, "Oh, this is blah, 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 the credit counselor, you know," and I'm questioning the person. "Are you, you're legitimate? Are you in the United States?" "Oh, yeah. Look at my website, and yeah, I'm all there." "Okay." So as I'm going along, you know, still giving them, you know, information that's, you know, fabricated. Yeah, I could hear the chatter, the background, the call center background, because they didn't mute themselves.
Yeah.
So at that point, you know, I'm like wondering, you know, are they sitting there listening while I'm talking to a legitimate credit counselor?
That wouldn't be so legitimate, would it?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
So then after, you know, all this, they asked me all the information again, including like social security numbers.
Uh-huh.
I then said, "Did you know, you know, you had a caller connect me to you?" And then right away the background chatter muted.
Oops! We left them on!
It was almost a surprise to this person as well. And they were like, "Oh, really?" I'm like, "Yeah." So you gotta watch out for this kind of stuff. But at that point, you know, they're like, "Thank you for calling and sorry for bothering you, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like...
They got off the phone quick.
Yeah.
What was the giveaway? Why'd you suspect them?
Well, I listen to your show every weekend, Leo.
Yeah.
That's number one.
Good man.
But, you know, these robocalls are just so obnoxious.
They are. And usually I just hang up on them. I don't want to spend any more time.
Yeah.
Here's another scam, which Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, ran into. And you've probably seen this on TV news, and it scared him. And I kind of had to reassure him. You've heard of the Yes scam, where they call and they say, in this case, Scott said, they said, "Can you hear me?" And Scott said, "Yes." And then the phone went dead. Now, he was very concerned because he'd seen on local news this Yes scam. Now, this does happen, but if you read it up on Snopes, this is probably not something you have to worry too much about. The theory is they record you saying yes, and they will then cram you. That means add services to your phone bill and use your recording of you saying yes as evidence that you agreed to it. Here's the thing. No one's ever stepped forward to say that's happened to me. In fact, if it has happened to you, not the call, but actually you found the charges later, I'd like to know. I don't think it really happens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, anytime I pick up a phone and there's a 3 to 5 second delay as the robot gets going, or if it says hold for an important message, you can always tell. So I hang up. Leo Laporte, you're my chocolate bar. The tech guy on the line. Edward from Hollywood, our next caller. Hi, Edward. Leo Laporte.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I'm thinking about buying i27. Mac with the Fusion Drive, and I did my research and comparison the Fusion Drive with the regular drive, and the Fusion Drive was faster. But I heard you say that it's not worth the money. What do you think?
It's faster than an old spinning drive, yeah. It's not as fast as a solid-state drive. So Apple's Fusion Drive, and there are Intel has a similar technology, uses a hybrid system with one solid-state drive, usually a smaller one, and one large spinning drive. And then the operating system pays attention to what you use the most. And the stuff that you need to be the fastest is moved, space permitting, to the solid-state drive. So it's kind of midway between a spinning drive and a totally solid state drive. This was a solution that made a lot of sense a few years ago when solid state drives were so expensive that you have to settle for a 64 gig or 128 gig drive because you couldn't afford a larger drive. If you need a 3 terabyte drive, then I guess the Fusion drive's okay, but it's only slightly faster than a spinning drive. It's not massively faster. And the way Apple does their solid state drives now on the iMac is so fast that if you can afford it, even if you get a little bit of a smaller drive, I'd go with the, you know, if you can get a 256 gig solid state drive in an iMac, I would get that. And if you need more space, because it has Thunderbolt ports, you can connect a very fast external drive and use that for the space. In general, I think you do a better job of figuring out what should be on the solid state and what should be on the spinning drive than the computer does. You know, your whole operating system should be on the solid state drive because that dramatically affects boot time. And then applications should be on the solid state drive because that dramatically affects load time. But data can generally be on a slower drive. So, you know, and the other problem with the Fusion drive, and this is less of a problem now, but originally it caused compatibility problems if you were going to use, for instance, Windows on an iMac. You couldn't really use a boot camp with Windows on an iMac until it took a while because of the compatibility issues. They had to support the hybrid drive as well.
And I had Parallels. So I was going to use Parallels
is fine because it hides the details of how the hard drives work from the host operating system, hides it from the virtual operating system. So Parallels is not a problem. It's only if you use boot camp. And now I think they've fixed it now. It's not as much of a problem. So it's kind of up to you. You can get, if you really need it, I need 3 terabytes. That's better than getting a spinning 3 terabyte drive. I haven't looked at Apple's pricing lately, but I would expect that the solid state drive pricing has fallen because to keep up with everybody else.
Well, the one that I want comes with the 1 terabyte, but I'm going to upgrade to 2 terabyte. But right. I never thought about the solid state drive. I'm going to consider that.
Yeah, consider just a pure solid state drive. It'll be smaller, but 256 gigs. We're all so spoiled now. Oh, I need a terabyte. Are you really using a terabyte? I mean, I know if it's there, you might use it just because. Well, I'm not going to erase anything because I don't have to. But I think most of the time. I don't have any system that has larger than a 512 gig drive, and that's plenty. That's a ton. That's half a terabyte. Is a ton of space, and because the iMac has these great external ports, it can really handle an external drive very well. If you did need more, you could always put it on an external drive.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad you called. Yeah, you've heard me say that. I'm not crazy about the Fusion technology. Intel does this as well, and some PCs, they'll have smaller, though, usually 32 or I think it's 32 gigabyte flash drives and then spinning drives. And every time I've seen benchmarks, it's been disappointing. The Fusion idea is kind of a disappointment. Doesn't give you the benefit. And really, how much benefit you're going to get is going to depend on how smart the software is about moving stuff around. And I'm not sure. I kind of like knowing where my stuff is. The Fusion drive is 2 drives that appear as 1 drive to you in the operating system. Underneath, the operating system knows the difference. But at the highest level, it looks like 1 drive. Bob in Rochester, Michigan. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks, Leo, for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've got an issue. I'm new, relatively new to these cell phones. I came kicking and screaming. Anyways, I'm about 2 months into this one. It's an LG Aristo.
Okay.
And I had heard or read whatever it was about using the USB port to charge up the battery in the cell phone. So I punched it in there, and I get this box down in the lower right corner. It's marked driver support with active optimization. And it says device update detected. And it says status 7 years out of date. Now, my laptop is less than a year old.
Just ignore that. That's Windows being silly. Just silly. That's a Windows message for the driver that, but it has nothing to do with the Aristo. That's just a silly Windows message. The phone connects, there's 2 ways the phone can connect. There's a USB drive that just looks like a drive you can drag stuff onto. Or it can connect as a photo, like a camera. And most people, by default, will have it connect as a camera because then you can import the photos from the phone. When they say charge it, you don't have to connect it to a computer. You can connect it to any powered USB port. So a lot of times when you get a phone, I guess the Aristo you didn't, you'll get a plug that has a USB port on it, type A USB port, and then you use a USB cable to connect the phone. That's just plugging it into the wall. You won't get any weird pop-ups or anything like that, and it charges. In other words, you're charging the phone, ignore the pop-up. You don't care what Windows thinks because you're not using it as a drive.
That was my question. Was this something I wanted to do? Or
No, just ignore it. The only time it might matter is if you wanted to copy stuff to and from the phone. And even then, the quote, out-of-date driver, who cares? Just use it.
7 years.
7 years. That's a weird message. That's a very strange message. How do you like – so you're using Android. It's your first smartphone. What do you do with it? Are you doing more than phone calls?
Well, I haven't done a whole lot as far as phone calls. What it is, I'm getting ready to build a house down in Florida, and I need to turn around and have something to keep in touch with our contractors. And so that's the reason why I went. Now, what happens once the house gets completed?
By then, you may be surprised yourself. You may find some things you like doing on that phone. It's great. It's a camera. It's a pretty good camera in there. It's you could text, of course, because it has an on-screen keyboard, so it's easier to text than the old phone where you had to type 666-211-34-1111 like that to do a text. Plus, you can check your email. And browse the internet if you have to. You know, I kind of like it having a computer in my pocket. I never have to live in mystery. You know, if I have a question, that actor, I know him. Where have I seen him before? And it's easy. I do this all the time. I look up the movie on IMDb and I say, oh yeah, he was in. And it's nice to have that kind of internet access always available to you, no matter where you are. You get hooked. Watch out. In any event, don't worry about that message. It doesn't mean a thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, Lawn Dog, you're probably right. That does not sound like a Microsoft message. Microsoft's driver support for connecting phones, USB phones, you would never get that message. He's running some fakaka software. That's some driver update program. I've told people before, stay away from driver update programs. That's where you get weird messages like, that thing is 7 years old. What are you doing? What are you doing? Normally, if you didn't have that software running, you'd plug it in, Windows would go boom, boom. It would say, and then you'd see a little bubble that says installing driver, and it's just a USB driver. And then it would be able to see it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. You're calling Kim Schaffer. She's answering the phones today. And our next caller comes from Arcata, California. Mark is on the line. Is it Arcata or Arcata?
Arcata,
okay. There's two.
Yeah.
What can I do for you, Mark?
I had a question about, I have an old HP laptop, and it has Windows 7, and I want to keep it that way, so I shut off my updates.
You don't have to anymore. Nobody's going to update you.
Okay, because I kind of felt like it was being pushed.
They were pushing, yeah. But that ended last July. That free upgrade to Windows 10 where they kept pounding on you and showed more and more ads, that ended last July, and it's no longer free, and so they won't do it. So you really should turn your updates on. You'll have quite a few, and you want them all because those are security patches at this point. Very important.
Okay, good, because those old computers are kind of like cars. If you start messing with them a lot, something's going to break.
Could not agree more. I think... You know, I took the upgrade in many cases because I had newer systems and I wanted Windows 10, and Windows 10 is great, but many tales of woe from people who did the upgrade and had lost data and had problems. And so absolutely, you shouldn't just assume that it's going to be an improvement. I think you did the right thing, and there's nothing wrong with Windows 7. So, but do those updates. You need to start doing them now.
Oh, okay, and one other thing, my girlfriend, we did the update on her newer Samsung computer, and it works, but she lost her keyboard function on the number keyboard.
Yeah.
So is that common too from the
No, not that I know of, but that, you know, that's, those are the, that's common in the sense that those are some of the kind of minor problems. She took the Windows 10 update and it never came back.
No, yeah, after that she lost her function on the keyboard, on the numbers.
That's not good. I'm surprised that it hasn't been an update since then. So she'll press the num lock, and is that what you're talking about, where you press the num lock and you get... Oh, I see what you're saying. You mean the function keys at the top of the keyboard.
The 10-digit...
Yeah.
On the side there.
Oh, the number pad. Okay.
The number pad.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure about that. Anybody know? So it sounds like the num lock key no longer does anything.
Right. You can play with it all you want. It won't do anything. You can use the numbers on the top of the keyboard.
Yeah.
But not on the side.
That's weird.
Yeah. And I told her, I warned her before. I said, don't upgrade. Keep Windows 8 on there for now.
I truthfully believe Windows 10 is a massive improvement. However, you know, as with any operating system upgrade, sometimes you get weird stuff. Has she been doing all her updates since then?
I'm not sure.
You should do your updates and make sure she does hers. Don't make her do them. Just encourage her to do them, because it will be much more secure. And it's likely that the manufacturer of that laptop, if that is a problem with that particular, hardware and Windows 10, will have fixed it by now. They just have to push out an update to their keyboard driver, and it'll all be better. It may also be and this is another thing that happens a lot with software operating system upgrades. It may have changed the default settings. So always after you do that, you may know things have changed a little bit or a little weird. Remember, we had the caller little earlier today whose Sound Blaster card stopped working with the Windows 10 Creators Update. And it really was a case of, I think, the Creators Update changing the default settings for the sound card in such a way that it didn't work right. But it's the kind of thing, if you go into the control panel and you change the settings back to the old way, it works fine. So I would take a look at your NumLock settings in the keyboard control panel. Make sure everything's the same. And then encourage her to update, because it may fix that problem. And the same for you. It's really important to get those security updates. You got to keep your system up to date. Keith in Bell, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Keith.
Hello, Keith.
There's supposed to be a caller. Where's the caller? Put Keith on hold. We keep people on hold for a while. Well, what I've learned is after an hour or two, they usually fix their problems and go away. So, no, we're going to try to wake Keith up. Richard in Los Angeles is next. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Good to talk to you again.
Talk to you. Thanks for calling.
I've had the Microsoft Digital Sound System 80 for a long time, and I upgraded to Windows 10. I haven't used the sound system much. When I tried to use it today, or yesterday actually, only the right speaker produced sound. And another thing that kind of is odd to me, I was checking the left speaker's cable or wire, whatever that is. It's that gray thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't plug into anything.
Maybe that's why the speaker doesn't do anything. It's just sitting there?
It's been that way, though. That's the funny thing. I've used this before. This is not the first time I've used this system, and it's been fine.
There's just a wire hanging out, not going anywhere?
Well, I can't find a port or
that's funny.
A connection.
So this was a three-piece speaker system Microsoft did with Philips. It's a subwoofer and a left and right, and it's designed for computers.
Right.
I would think every cable should plug into something. I'm not sure if that's why you're missing your right speaker or if it's something else. I'm looking at a picture of the Digital Sound System 80, and it looks like it does. It's not a USB cable. It looks. How does it connect to your computer?
It connects to the subwoofer, supposedly.
And how does the subwoofer connect to the computer?
There's a cable that goes into the back of it.
It goes into the speaker port?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all right then. That's
the right speaker works fine.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the cables have failed. Could be that
there's no place to put the cable. That's my problem.
Well, the cable would be actually the subwoofer plugging into your computer.
Right.
So that's the one that's probably at issue. That cable should have two rings at the little mini phono jack, one for left, one for right. Sometimes if it's worked loose, only one ring will be connected. Make sure it's plugged in right. Make sure that in other words, it could be software, but I'm really suspecting hardware here. Right.
Do you have any suggestions about a substitute? Because I have a feeling...
Oh, there's so many better things out there now. This is... How old is that?
That's about... I think it was... 06 was the last copyright date on it.
Yeah. Yeah. They shipped it... they started shipping it in 1998.
Wow.
In other words, you have a last century speaker system.
Well... Pardon, sorry.
It does have, and it might be worth checking. Apparently, I'm looking at the specs. It seems like it does have a USB connector as well. You might try looking and see if you can connect the USB. That would be better. That would be digital. And in fact, any speaker system I'd recommend at this point for a computer probably would be connected via USB, not speaker jack, phono jack. The reason being the phono jack is an analog connection and is prone to noise, buzz, hum, and other little analog issues. A USB connection is purely digital, and what happens is the bits get sent to the speaker system, and internally in the speaker system, they're converted using the digital to analog converter. And generally, that's going to be, it's good, it's always better to do it outside, away from the computer, where there's a lot of radio frequency and noise, but also you may have a better DAC than comes with a computer.
Do you have any suggestions about it?
Sure.
Because I think
sure.
This is dead.
Yeah, and you know what? You've had it a long time. It might be time to get a new one.
I would think so.
Logitech makes excellent computer speakers. It really depends on how good you want the sound to be. If you really if that's your stereo, I'd spend some money and get something from a company called Audio Engine. You can get a subwoofer and separate left-right or just the left-right. They're much more pricey. They're hundreds of dollars, but they're as good as your stereo. That's Audio Engine. And then if you want to save money, Logitech makes some very good computer speakers. Somewhere in the middle, Bose also makes computer speakers that are quite good. All three of those will sound probably better than this old Philips system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. This is a piece of computer history. I bought, because I wanted for my, I guess he's gone. Oh, well. I wanted for my my Dot, my Amazon Echo Dot, I wanted a good pair of powered speakers for it. So I ended up buying some inexpensive Logitech powered speakers. They're quite good. It's not my main stereo system, but it sounds quite good. Yeah, let's celebrate. What a great day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo. Last segment, I can't believe it. This time flies, doesn't it? Last segment of the week. Did we get, we'd lost Keith, I guess. How about Josh? He's on the line from Georgia. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I enjoy your show very much.
Good. What can I do for you?
Well, I have I bought one of the last series of the MacBook Pro 17-inch screen laptops.
17 inches. They discontinued that years ago.
I know it. I got one in 2011. It was the last one on the shelf.
Wow.
Anyway, I love the machine. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And I had just gone over from an E-Machine and then a Sony. Anyway, I love Mac. I just think
good. Much, much better.
But anyway.
Yeah.
I messed up.
Uh-oh.
Well, I kept getting this message from Google saying that my Safari was not going to be supported by Google.
Yeah.
I'm using 10.8.5, which is Mountain Lion.
Yeah, and that's as far as you can go.
Yes, and so I did an upgrade. I thought... Well,
now, what do you mean Google said they wouldn't support it?
Well, that's what. Every time I would go to Google, like for Gmail or something.
Oh, for Gmail wouldn't support it, yeah. Gmail's a web app, and it might have technologies that Safari... Older versions of Safari don't support. Here's my suggestion. you're not, you know, you can, because it's an old Mac, Apple's not going to update it past Mountain Lion. You're done.
Correct.
So you're not going to get a newer version of Safari either. So what you need to do is just use some other browser when you use Google properties. Use Google's own browser, Chrome. That's up to date. They're keeping that up to date.
The one reason I'd like to go back to Safari, though, Leo, is all of my bookmarks and all of that.
Chrome will import all of your Safari bookmarks. But you don't need to use Chrome all the time, just when you want to use Gmail or any part, any website that says, oh, your browser's too old.
Well, my Safari has a big white zero with a line through it. It won't open, so I don't know if any other browser can go in there and get the information out.
Oh, yeah, it can, because it's not stored in Safari. It's stored in files on the disk. So Chrome can open it and import it. Okay. I am puzzled why your Safari's looking like that, though. You can download a new copy of Safari. Maybe you should do that.
I did that, but that's where the trouble started.
That's where my troubles began.
I was wondering if I could go back to the same version I had on here and reload that over the one that I put on there, if that would open it up.
Yeah, what you should do is you should drag the Safari icon, the one with the zero over it, drag it to the trash.
Okay.
And then download Safari again, or re-download Safari, and you'll find it on Apple's site. It's probably apple.com/Safari. And
I couldn't find the one that will match Mountain Lion.
Well, Apple should say, oh, I see you're using Mountain Lion. It doesn't do that, huh?
No.
It's not apple.com.
All right, let me ask you this then, Leo, and then I'll get out of your hair. Could I go ahead and download, like, Yosemite or...
Nope. You can't install it on that machine. It's too old.
I've got all the stuff.
I know. Apple, in their infinite wisdom, is blocking you from installing a more up-to-date operating system.
Well, they keep telling me I can upload Sierra if I want to.
They do?
Yes.
Oh.
I got 8 gigs of RAM. I got...
It's not that. It's the other hardware. But, okay, well, I don't know what the latest operating system for the 17-inch is. I assumed it was Mountain Lion. That's not uncommon for computers of that era. But if you can install a more recent version of a Mac OS, you should absolutely do so.
All right, the same question again, then. Will the new Safari...
That will update Safari.
Okay.
You always want to run the latest version of Mac OS that you can. It's more secure, and it works with modern technologies, and you automatically get the Safari that matches that version.
All right. Well, I have a backup already.
Yeah, you should be... If you can, if it lets you get it, you should absolutely get it.
One last question. Yeah. I also run VMware Fusion with virtual drive of about 80 gigs on this computer.
Okay.
Do I need to back that up also, or will it be backed up when I back up my...
It will be. What happens with virtual machines is they create a single file that's the entire Windows operating system, and your backup program should just back that up. But what's really nice with VMware and Parallels and good virtualization software is they have a snapshot feature, which is very handy. You could say, hey, take a snapshot right now of my Windows, and it'll make a backup copy in case you download a virus or you screw your Windows up or whatever. Then you can restore from the snapshot and go right back in place. And it doesn't occupy the full 80 gigs that duplicating the file would.
Okay.
All right. So use that snapshot feature.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now. Leo, thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Yeah, and everybody who's using a Mac should be using the latest version of Mac OS. Remember, they used to call it OS X, that you can install. Apple will stop you at some point. Older Macs only go up to Mountain Lion. But if you can get a more recent version, maybe, you know, if you can get Sierra, you could probably get El Capitan, which is the current version. Get the current version. And along with that will come a more up-to-date Safari, and that'll eliminate your problems. If you still, you know, if you can't get far enough along to get an up-to-date version of Safari and Google still complains, then use Google's browser, and it can import your bookmarks. So no harm, no foul there. Okay, somebody's telling me, Belgian guy says, yeah, the App Store says you can, but when you try to install it, it will say, no, no, no. I'll have to, you know, I can look it up. I'm just not doing it, because I'm trying to pay attention, but you can easily look up what the latest version of Mac OS, any given Macintosh, is capable of. Apple will tell you. You can only get it this far. That vintage of that 17-inch MacBook Pro is old enough. I suspect it's actually, it's probably Mountain Lion. Last call of the day. We go to Denver, Colorado. Thanks for your patience, Russ. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, appreciate you taking my call. I know you're coming up on the end of the hour, so quick question for you.
Yes, sir.
What's the best way to keep bidirectionally two folders in sync? I know I can do a robocopy job and do a scheduled task.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. You, what you want is a synchronization tool. Microsoft used to give away, but they still do. It's not a very good one. Something called SyncToy that does that. But I prefer a free shareware program. You'll end up wanting to pay for it, called Second Copy. It comes from Centered Systems. Used it for years. It will do exactly what you want. It'll keep two folders, whether they're on the same drive or different drives, in perfect sync. Then you remember, important point, there's a checkbox that says, do you want to sync deletions as well? And be careful about that. If you want to make sure that you don't lose any data, do not sync deletions. Syncing deletions is risky because that means if you delete a file in either of the two folders, it's deleted in both. So sometimes people get bit by that, you know? So remember, syncing deletions is not ideal for backup. But it's great if you want to literally keep two folders looking exactly the same. Second Copy from Centered Systems. There are lots of others, maybe even some more modern in the chat room. If you want to fire away at your favorite sync program, let me know, and we'll put that in the show notes. Second Copy is now at secondcopy.com. Okay, it used to be centeredsystems.com. All right. And a lot of people agree that SyncToy is maybe not the best tool. Microsoft hasn't really kept that up to date. It's a very useful tool to have. Well, we've had some fun, haven't we? The website, techguylabs.com, will have links, information, audio and video of the show after the fact. It's a great resource. It's absolutely free. There's no sign up. Just use it to your heart's content. Tell your friends, techguylabs.com. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Most of all, thanks to you for being here. I can't wait to do this again with you next time. Join me, won't you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.